Well, I'm Janelle Crop-Baker, and I'm here with Bonnie Miller-McLemore, and she is a participant in the Colossal Institute seminar on vocation across the lifespan. And I first of all just wanted to ask you, how has your participation in the seminar influenced you or interfaced with your own work?
Oh, that's a great question. I would not have picked vocation as a theme that I thought, I mean, it percolates through a lot of my interests in terms of women's lives, children's lives, family and family and spirituality. But I wouldn't have picked a theme, I wouldn't have said, oh, I've got to go write something on vocation. And maybe it's somewhat the abstraction of that word. It sounds like, well, what is that if you tell somebody about that you're coming to a conference on vocation? I always feel like I have to sort of explain it. But I would say it's really reinvigorated maybe not just my work, but my own life. I think it's been because we've been shifting from thinking about children to thinking about, we've kind of taken different life phases. So we started with adults, elderly, youth, and a lot of our conversation has allowed, I think, each of us to think about our own lives at those stages and how we were thinking, you know, either intentionally or unintentionally about vocation as a, how we were living our lives in terms of our call or our faith lives and how it was different at different phases of our lives. Mm-hmm. So it's, I think it's actually expanded my own personal self-reflection. I'm not so sure it's had a. It has led me to wonder if I should teach classes that would, you know, do a class on vocation in this back at the Divinity School, that kind of thing. So it's opened up some new ways of thinking about teaching and writing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you've written extensively about childhood. In the Midst of Chaos and Let the Children Come, among other works too. What led you to your interest in these topics?
It's probably would say they came out of my, I mean, they came largely out of my own life experience that fit nicely with some of my professional interests in people, how, why people do what they do, some of the courses I teach that are about how we become who we are, as well as how we care for people when I teach pastoral care. So there was a kind of nice conjunction between the discipline that I know as an academic and what was happening in my own life as a mother who was also teaching and writing. So it really was a conjuncture of those two things. I would say I backed into the whole realm of vocation, not by intention, but by the inevitable interest I had. So my initial interests were around women's lives and how women were struggling to negotiate the complexities of paid work and family responsibilities. And just that recognition that I was interested in women at the conjuncture, the coming together of work and family or work and love, suddenly I realized, well, that's what vocation is. And, you know, I should do more reading about vocation. And in fact, some of that work was led me into how Christians and culture have defined work and misdefined work or distorted what work is. So I think I kind of backed into the topic of vocation, but then found it a really useful term, a way to talk about work and love together. I did, you know, some of my work was in psychology, and at that time I was looking at Erik Erikson, who is known as the life cycle theorist and known probably most for his interest in identity crisis in youth and young adulthood. But he also has this concept that's called generativity, which is the adult stage of producing and taking care of what you produce. So I was using that psychological term to try to get at what I thought were adult struggles around, and what I would call not a crisis of identity, but a crisis of generativity. You know, how do we take care of the gifts we've been given and what we produce in our work and our family lives. And then I realized, oh my gosh, there's a Christian concept for this,
mm-hmm.
and it's vocation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're so facile usually in culture with psychological ideas like identity crisis, or generativity was a word people have used quite a bit
mm-hmm.
in the social sciences. But we lose sight of some of the rich theological language and traditions around helping us understand the demands of adult life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of backed into vocation through other interests.
Mm-hmm. So vocation is a term, to the extent that it's even used, is often understood for adults. How do you connect vocation to children, and how would you describe children's vocation?
That's a really fun question, because again, I think I was initially, I hadn't thought about that until a colleague invited me to contribute to a book that I think has in its title The Vocation of Children. And I think the fact that I hadn't thought about it is very typical of our failure often to include children fully as full persons and humans in the Christian life and in regular everyday life at large. Part of that is how we've, you know, misconstrued childhood, probably even for the last two centuries, as other than adult or as over against adulthood, and as a privileged period of, you know, this is, you know, 20th century Western privileged middle class perception, but it's sort of romanticized, innocent, protected. And so I think that's led us to sometimes demean or not see how much children contribute and need to contribute. So being asked to think about children vocationally allowed me to rethink their place in the family and in the Christian faith life. And another place that I think I was led to think about children is at my very, and vocation, was, I'm trying to remember how I got interested in this. As a parent, I became really aware of how little children see themselves as contributing members to the household in terms of their actual contribution to the welfare of the family and the wider community.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the first times it just really jumped out was when I was with one of my three sons on a field trip when they were in elementary school. And we went to a farm where one of the persons was taking us around and showing the kids the different farm implements. And she asked the children, well, do any of you have any chores, or do any of you have any work? And they all said no. And what she wanted is to tell them, well, this is how, you know, the kids used to do this job on the
right.
farm, they used to do that job. And it just so illustrated the sort of demise of children as full participants in a family economic and, you know, religious community, as a unit, economic
mm-hmm.
and religious unit. So I began to want to, you know, ask myself about what are children's contributions, responsibility, call, place, and I really did come at it through that sense of that they have more to contribute than the 20th century way of thinking about children in the household.
So how would you describe what children's vocation is, especially, you know, if we've made too much contrast between children and adults, but yet there is some contrast? So how would you describe the vocation of children?
One thing I would say, and this is another way I was led to this interest or thought about this interest. One thing that children do is children form adults. That sounds really backwards, but we tend to think that adults are responsible, and we are, for the care of and formation of children and
mm-hmm.
their growth. But as I was doing my work on In the Midst of Chaos, probably one of the most important insights in that book, which is not the predominant argument, but is certainly there, is how powerfully children, infants, toddlers, and children shape us as adults. They help us see things we have never seen before. They renew and can renew our hope, or just a couple of examples. So they reinvigorate adulthood in a way. That also kind of goes back to Erik Erikson's idea that adults need to be needed, and they are, in response to the care of children, form themselves. So that's one vocational role or contribution that children make. In thinking and writing more about this, I also would identify, you know, today children have real responsibilities that are related to their own work, which often has to do with school. You know, that is a call in some ways to learn and continue to be formed in terms of learning.
Would you identify play as part of a child's vocation?
Definitely. And that's another way I got led into some of this interest on children and vocation, because play has sometimes gone hand in hand with the dichotomy or break between adults and children. So adults work, children play.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely children have a real ability to enter fully into play. So much of their way of being in the world is through play. And adults, we were just in our conversation this morning talking about adults get in the pool and they swim laps.
Mm-hmm.
Children get in the pool and they do all sorts of wonderful things with water. And of course, some people describe play as a means of learning. It is a way of practicing and learning without consequence or without, you know, you have the freedom to experiment in a way when you play. And children have a real access to that, in part because childhood is a period of rightfully somewhat suspended responsibility when it's fully embraced. That's not true of all contexts, and class and economics can have a big impact on that. But there is something about childhood and the suspension of, and that's a distinction then from entering youth and young adulthood and adulthood,
mm-hmm.
that children ought to be given that space. But we shouldn't idealize play or the playful child or dichotomize in children play, only play.
Mm-hmm.
It's richer to think of a continuum and a complexity around play and work that children and adults share
mm-hmm.
and together.
So you mentioned chores a little bit earlier. Are you a proponent of children doing chores? And if so, how does that fit into their sense of vocation?
You know, I think chores are difficult in today's contemporary context because they sometimes can feel quite artificial and not sort of token. Because we live in such an industrial, post-industrial, fast-paced life, it's hard to see what they can really contribute that genuinely is needful. And I think chores have to be experienced for the child as a genuine contribution and participation, and not punitive and limited in, so that they feel more like a punishment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to put the dishes in the dishwasher.
Mm-hmm.
And conveying the sense that this really is we have shared labor and shared responsibility. The house itself is all of ours to care for. But I do think that the U.S. as a country is you can see a contrast with some other countries where children are, and maybe some other cultures where children are brought into chores more fully as a fuller participant in a way that doesn't make them feel like this is just a tiny little thing you're doing and we're making you do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely an important part of children's entry into the family workload. I think it's helped in my own family context that both my husband and I have been pretty committed to shared labor within the household. So I'm not doing, and everybody has different ways of dividing, you know, what has to get done. But my own kids saw, you know, a lot of rotation of who was doing laundry or who was doing cooking as two examples. And so at least they saw modeled, you know, between the adults in the household, some effort at just distribution of the labor. Mm-hmm. That did suggest, I hope, to them that they ought to be participants also.
Right.
But I think it's hard, and I do think I found it harder the older. So in some ways, maybe it's just like spiritual formation. You don't want to wait till your children are 12 and think, oh, we probably should be praying, you know, because you've missed a window mm-hmm. of opportunity. And it is better to bring children in early. That's true in even adult-adult relationships. So I see, you know, colleagues or friends who 20 or 10 or 5 years into a relationship realize that the household labor is not justly distributed.
Good luck changing it at
Good
that
luck
point.
Changing it, right, yeah. So it really does help, I think, to begin to sort of bring children in soon and assume they're going to be participants. But it gets harder the older, I think, that your kids get, and the more, sometimes more artificial. So we had, for example, a desire, we would sort of say one child had to rotate through the grocery shopping, just always participate in that. But there were times where our kids are like, we just don't have time. And then the vocation of being a student, and a good student, was often valid. You know, they had other things that really were of priority for them that meant that we continued to do a lot of the household work. But we struggle with this, obviously. Mm-hmm. So here we would be cleaning or doing something else and our kids were playing Nintendo. You know, it's like, wait a minute, there's something wrong with this picture. And I can't say we were completely, you know, successful in really being inclusive around chores.
So you talked about children as calling forth adults and forming adults. How do you think that adults should help children establish a sense of vocation?
I wish I had thought about this more as a parent than I did when my sons are now in their 20s. And maybe I am thinking back and wondering, would it have helped them in their 20s if I had invited more conversation around what they envisioned for their lives. Or even, I guess I would say, maybe I'm thinking too much in the future tense as if the call is only actualized when you're in the 20s, but I don't remember, you know, I think I could have been more cognizant as a parent in helping my kids see that what they were doing in the household or outside the household, at school or in the community or in the church, as part of gifts and callings. I didn't think about that as much as I might now. And it might give greater blessing or sanction or encouragement to be thinking and using that kind of language to help, you know, bless and lift up their distinct gifts and so forth. I think we were probably doing it inadvertently without the language. So even teaching three boys how to relate well with each other and establishing rules like, you know, you can't make yourself feel better by making someone else feel bad, just that being a norm. So I think we were probably conveying what could be called vocational aspirations of how you live a good life in relationship to each other and to your own interests and gifts. But I didn't really think about it as a parent and my children. I think I'm thinking about it now more because they're in their 20s and they really do have major, it is an era for them, I can see this as a parent, where you make significant decisions that are, you've laid the ground for them in the first two decades, but at that point they become rather pivotal about what degree program you pursue or what part-time job you take or what relationship you enter into. One of the comments that we've shared just yesterday as a group, we talked, another friend in the group said that she and her daughter are talking more about how do you enter into a good relationship, which, you know, is a piece of vocation. And it's sometimes hard to take time and talk about those things as a family. They're so important. And I don't know how you learn those. You do learn them by modeling and looking at other people, but actually talking about some of the values that go in, the values and practices that are part of a good relationship, or the values and practices that are part of a determining which degree or job you pursue. Sometimes those are the things you just don't think to talk about that could really help, mm-hmm. be helpful.
So what would be one or two things that you might say to parents of younger children about nurturing their children's sense of vocation or their identity in terms of being human and what they are called to do?
One thing I guess I would say, and maybe this is overset already in popular culture, but to try to leave a lot of space for children's gifts and recognizing and affirming and welcoming and cultivating their particular gifts. And sometimes these aren't easy to recognize or see, and invite and nurture and make space for. So I think, for example, of one of my sons who I think always had an interest in percussion. This is a minor example. And I had just no range of understanding of it beyond it just hitting things, making noise. You know, and I didn't really see it as an instrument. Mm-hmm. And I think that he eventually managed to, you know, commandeer a drum set. But we just weren't in that. That wasn't our world that we came from or that we were going to. And so, you know, just realizing and, you know, making space for something we know very little about. Or another example maybe, that I think that as a parent you have to be incredibly receptive, and maybe we are a little less authoritarian than some parents, or authoritative, maybe even more generous. We have tried to leave a lot of space, and, you know, like one of our sons just was not finding college to be, it was not working well for him, and he may end up doing a very different kind of work than what both my husband and I have done as sort of professionals in the humanities who are deeply committed to thinking about religion and service and ministry. So there's a lot of, I mean, I guess that would be one thing I would mm-hmm. say.
How about a message to pastors or congregations, religious communities about the vocations of children in their midst?
You know, I think I would say a couple things to pastors. One is just the visibility of children and making children more fully included in religious communities. I think we've created in the last 50 years children's wings of, you know, Christian education mm-hmm. that often take children sort of out of the midst of congregational life. And I'm not just talking about logistics and practices, but I'm also talking about a kind of cognitive shift of really seeing children as full participants. So I once watched a wonderful youth pastor when she preach to the adults, and I thought, you know what, she should just preach to the youth that were sitting together in the front several pews and really talk to them. Sometimes our ability not to see children is striking, and not children as cute or children as making us feel good as adults, as we sometimes do in some congregations where we have children come forward for children.
Kind of parading them.
Parading them. But really, I realize how deeply they think, how much they're engaging major life issues, how profound sometimes their insights can be, and how much they can contribute. We have just so habitually in our culture kind of undersold what's happening for them. The second thing I would want pastors to think about is their ministry to children is simultaneously a ministry to the adults. And I think about adults in two ways. It's ministry to the parents of those actual children. And I think whatever ministers or pastors can do to keep children and their primary parents involved with each other around faith issues, whether it's by commissioning them to read the scripture every day at the dinner table or twice this week, or actually allowing families to meet their children in church instead of adults go to this part of the church and kids go the other direction and they're not really supported in their talking together around faith issues. But the other adult population I'm thinking about are the non-biological adult, but what the African-American communities talk about, the other mothers. The rest of the congregation has a responsibility to be present with the nurture of and the participation of children. And children need many adults. And congregations are probably one of the few sort of remaining social institutions where generations can come together and where other mothering adults can make a big difference in children's lives. So those are some things that I would think pastors might be wanting to think about in terms of recognizing that children are on their own, faith path with call and vocation and all the things that we assume adults are already struggling with.
Mm-hmm.
The children are already engaging in those kinds of questions about what are their contributions and what, how will they face, how are they facing some of life's challenges.
Right. Well, thank you, Bonnie. Thank you for your insightful contributions to this topic. And like I said, we'll put it up on the website, and I'm sure there will be a lot of folks who are interested to hear how deeply you've thought about these issues.
Great. I'm glad. I'll be glad to hear whether you go transcript
okay.
or whatever.
Yeah, I'll let you know. It'll probably be a month or two at least. So
I guess I left my water bottle. So how do you do this? You must have to go back over and...
we usually have a student worker transcribe
the
interviews.
Yeah.
And then, depending on a number of factors, then we edit it. And, I'm still learning about all this.
Well, in transcriptions, since I haven't done very much interview, I wouldn't know this from my experience, but when I've read other people,